You know, we could talk to a customer, put together a plan, and just deploy it right away. Go talk to customers and never stop talking to customers ever, because that's the only way you actually get feedback from people. Everyone has ideas. Yeah. Everyone has thoughts about what this is going to look like. Do this sooner than I did. You're never going to have the perfect anything.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman with Intellectual Strategies. I'm here talking with awesome CEOs who are building companies. They're usually building companies in, say, the $5 to $50 million range, sometimes a little smaller, sometimes a little bigger. But they're here to share some of the behind-the-scenes moments with us so that we can see, you know, what CEOs are dealing with, how they're making decisions, what types of points they're reflecting on, insights they're gaining, and you know, what types of breakouts and breakthroughs that they're achieving. So thanks for joining us today. Today, I've got a great guest here, Seth Merritt with WellBe Health, and a career that he left that he didn't have to leave, but he left to build this new thing and try it out. And I'm excited to talk with you today, Seth. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be good. We had an icebreaker segment just before this that the audience will probably have seen already, but I think we dove into a bunch of stuff there. I wanted to kind of pick back up maybe where we were. I don't always do this because it's not intended to be like a flowing segment, but you had so many things that you mentioned in there, and I made a note of a couple of them. The one that I wanted to kind of just kick off with here was your comment about how quickly you can deliver or impact your customers in the type of business you're in now. Like, tell me more about that. I think we all would say that seems naturally correct, right? Like, startups move fast and big companies move slow. But that's an interesting phrase to kind of pick out and even vocalize and just say, well, I'm seeing the impact. Like, I love making an impact faster with my customers. Tell me more about what that means to you.
Yeah, I mean, I spent probably 20 years in health insurance, which is just naturally slow, very risk averse, very corporate, and moving was difficult. And I remember, you know, trying to bring things out, whether it was, you know, new ideas around contracting or payment models or just technology things I was trying to deploy with the team. And it was just like impossible. Everything required 17 levels of approval. There was always someone who was a no, they didn't like it. You had to convince them for whatever reason, personally, politically, whatever, why this is a good idea. And it just didn't happen. And that wasn't the reason I necessarily started and became an entrepreneur. But seeing now, you know, we could talk to a customer or we could recognize a gap in our own business early, put together a plan and just deploy it right away. And whether that makes things cheaper, faster, it's a better product. We see a gap in the market. Customers are complaining to us about like X, Y, and Z. Can you solve for it? We can just do it much faster. Or even like from the company perspective, something as stupid as like, hey, our benefits aren't working the way we want to. We wish we had this added to it. We wish we had some sort of like incentive program for the team, anything like that. We can just do it, you know? And yeah. You see it so much faster. So, you know, for example, you know, we had an issue for our business, you know, being able to like outreach to patients and explain what the program is. You know, we just didn't have the capacity to go call all of these patients and explain everything. So we started looking at different like AI voice solutions to be able to go deploy it. Within 60 days, you know, we had a fully functioning, like very automated solution that was actually doing better than our own team in terms of consent build out for the patients. It's quite robust. It answers questions. It does everything we would want it to do. And like thinking about that, finding a new vendor, implementing a new technology, adding AI, putting patient outreach consent into like a new tool. Anywhere I ever worked before, that would take like 2 years, 3 years to even just consider this. And it's like we had it up and running within 60 days. We were able to continue to tweak it. And like, I just love that because, you know, we're solving a problem. We're getting patients into the program faster. That's helping our clients. That's helping us. And, you know, it gives us like a whole new tool. We built this thing and then it was like, hey, this thing could actually do 7 other projects for us as well. Like, why don't we build X, Y, and Z on top of it? And it's just like that unlock. Level of innovation and constant movement is satisfying, you know? So for me, being able to see things grow on the company, for like the team being able to give them access to stuff that they didn't have before. And then for like our customers being able to give them solutions that they can't do internally. And it's kind of funny, like we sell a lot of things into health systems and in provider groups, and they're naturally slow as well. So it's like, yeah, we are able to show them, oh no, we spun this thing up, you know, in 2 weeks, and it's like fully vetted, and you know, it's got all the HIPAA security requirements, everything that you would want on it. And just the fact that we can move that quickly is surprising to like a lot of the customers that we end up working with.
In the time that they're in their natural cadence with their extended sales conversations, and you're like, wait, we already built it for you. Like from the last call to this call, the thing you talked about, we listened, we heard, we built something. So you can not only, you know, have it in the future, you can have it right now.
Yeah, that's literally, I mean, we've put that in pitch decks. Like we'll talk to a provider, they'll talk to us about something. Okay, like let's set up a follow-up call in 2 weeks. Then we're able to show them like, hey, this thing is live. We already did this. This is like the MVP version of it, but they'll have something spun up quickly. And for us, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's fine. We've learned something about it. But if it works and it's valuable, or we see the value in there, even if it's not for this customer, it gives us something to like focus on in terms of building. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, lets us push sort of the forefront of innovation and technology and things that we can do to make our business better. And also lets us show customers what is out there. Cause I think a lot of them are probably in the same position I was in, just kind of frustrated by like, I see there's value, there's ways we can be doing this differently, but I'm stuck within the constraints of my organization that doesn't want to move here. So we try to put things in place that make it easy to kind of like move the needle quickly for our customers.
I love that. As you're talking about all that, I've got some personal theories about what I call insight profiles, or maybe you could call them innovation profiles. You mentioned, you know, because when you talk about the ability to move fast, iterate, you know, with your customers in real time, and just the satisfaction that brings, the impact it creates, it makes me wonder a little bit more about you personally, Seth. Like, would you say that that what drives you is the fact that you're creating the impact on the customer? Because I think different people have different reasons, right? And I think we could wrap it all up in one big ball, but I'd love to know if we can maybe dissect it a little bit more. Is it the impact you're creating on the customer? Is it the fact that you're able to build something and have it done and be like, oh, look what we just made? Like, it's, you know, fun to have something that you built and it sits in your hands or sits on your phone and you can use it. Is it just the innovation process, like the idea of exploring into the unknown that you like? Like, is there a specific part of this kind of innovation process or this impact process that really drives you? Or is it really kind of, you love all of it?
I love all of it. As you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, that's it. And then the next thing, like, yeah, that's it. No, that's it. I definitely love tinkering with things. I've definitely found myself to be a builder. And that's something that as I've evolved in my like CEO journey and like less around the tinkering and building, that's a gap like I miss. So I actually carved out separate time on my calendar called Tinker Time, where I just like build stuff.
Oh, nice.
Interesting to me, you know, and try to deploy it out to like our product team to kind of take it from there. But I love building something out of nothing. And I love the innovation process of getting something together, getting feedback on it. I think one of the biggest gaps in like any sort of evolution is just doing the first step. Like everyone has ideas, everyone has thoughts about what this is going to look like when it's completed. Not that many people are willing to be like, okay, well, let me get the first like crappy version out and just see if it works. So I'm always like, let's get the first crappy version out and just see if it works and then we'll fix it. But then I also do love, you know, the recognition from like your customers that when they see something and react to it and say, this is awesome, this is innovative, this is not in the market, I love what you're doing, like, build more of this for me. Like I do enjoy that. But I think what's actually driving me to do it is probably fundamentally centered around just like building something out of nothing and creating something that didn't exist before.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. And I think we're all kind of a mix of these different profiles, but there's one of the profiles I actually designate as a builder, and the building process is fun because I think, you know, if you're driven by the building or you're driven by the, you know, the networking, the social side of it, you're driven by the innovation, whatever it is that drives you. I think there are some there's some things that counterbalance that too. Like sometimes our fears sit in different places, depending on what it is that we like to do. You know, a builder might want to build regardless of the validation they get. Whereas an innovator might say, I'm going to explore something new, regardless of whether or not I end up building something. Like it's the exploration that I like. And so I think there's this balance between our interests and maybe our fears or our kind of inhibitions is probably a better word, for each of these types of profiles. So thanks for sharing that with me. Cause I'm doing some informal surveys, I guess, or some studying on my own time about these types of things. So I'm just curious.
I think it's definitely builder. That's what I would resonate with of all those, just fundamentally what I think pushes me.
I love it. Well, let's get into what you have built then. Wellbe Health. Tell us a little bit about Wellbe Health and, you know, give us some history about the, you know, where it came from, what it looks like today. And we'll get into later some more of the, you know, building is kind of the first stage in the breakout arc that we're going to talk about, what you built. Then we'll talk about maybe what broke and a breakout moment and then the breakthrough at the end.
Yeah, sure. So high level, basically, like Wellbe Health provides care for patients for their doctors in between all those office visits for those patients who have chronic diseases. So we focus on things like high blood pressure, diabetes, congestive heart failure, things that happen that are not going to get solved in the 15-minute office visit when you go see your doctor. That all happens in between the visits. So making sure people are compliant with their medications that they need to be on, answering questions for them, making sure they're showing up to their specialist, making sure they're, you know, on a diet program, exercise, all the stuff that has to happen. So basically, we provide that care for doctors basically in between the office visits for their patients who need it. And we started essentially in 2022. That's when we like launched. And like I said, I had spent my career working for health plans. We were trying to make this shift into what they call value-based care. So moving away from just billing every single time you come into a visit to basically how do we pay doctors for outcomes. And
okay,
what I saw from the payer end was really not much more than like a financial exercise of like shifting who's at risk for payment. But at the end of the day, everything's still centered around an office-based visit for care. So
transactional, very transactional, not outcome-based.
Yeah. And what we were doing was basically we'd go into these like health systems provider groups and say, hey, if you can better manage the population, we'll cut you in on some of our money. If you can't manage the population any better, you owe us money back because we're taking risk now on you. But at the end of the day, we weren't talking to patients or doctors who were the only two people who really matter whatsoever. This was just like, okay, we have a new contract structure about how we're getting paid, but who's going to change the way care is delivered to that patient? You know, they're still going to walk out of the office not knowing what to do about their diabetes. The doctor's still trying to see 20 patients in a day to make sure they hit their numbers, and nobody's really getting the care they need. So kind of my builder thing we were talking about, I was just bored and I was like, hey, I'm going to learn how to write software. So I wrote a patient-facing app for diabetic patients to just see if we gave them tools to learn more about their health, how they could, you know, eat better, diet, manage their stress, that kind of stuff. It's going to move the needle on their diabetes. So I built something, assuming it would just like die. You know, I was doing like five other projects at the same time just for fun. And like patients actually downloaded this and used it, which to me was surprising because like, who am I? Why are you even downloading this app and you're trusting me?
Did you do this inside of the company or was this outside like, side project?
This was outside side project. So this was just something I was like building off on my own. It was actually when I went back to get my MBA and we had to do like a project. So I was like, I'm going to do an actual project. And part of the coursework was like going out and talking to customers, actually like iterating the product and like reporting on what happened. So it was like a little bit of a formalized process. And it was just kind of interesting. Like we did it, like when I talked to patients as customers, they were like, yeah, I don't have anything like this. I would use it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to talk to some of the providers that I work with. They didn't have anything. So it seemed to me there was a need there. There was a patient need. There was a doctor need, which was kind of surprising. Again, like this was me building something in my loft. I'm not an engineer. I'm just building what I can figure out on my own through YouTube videos.
And this was pre-AI, right?
This was totally pre-AI. Yeah, so, this was just
so when you say build something, that means something totally different today than it did in 2022. Like,
yeah. It's even worse now, though, because now my like CTO is like, Seth, stop like building stuff, because now you can generate like new stuff with Claude in
every
like
week.
An
you're
hour.
Like, hey, I got an idea. He's like, no,
literally, they're just like, stop. Let me like implement the last thing you did. But yeah, this was like back in the day, you know, just building something from scratch and just starting it. And then, yeah, when I realized there was actually a need for on the doctor side and on the patient side, I just spent a little bit more time with it until it actually, you know, ultimately evolved into what Wellbe is. But I can go into that if you want.
Yeah, I want to get there. But tell me how you did the validation with the project, because that's, you know, that's a hard part for a lot of people. A lot of our CEOs are obviously past that point. They're into the scaling stage of their business. But for any listeners that we have, they're kind of the founder stage, their early stage, trying to get validation. Like, what did you do? Did you go to doctors first? Did you go to patients first? What did that look like?
Yeah, I would say this is probably the best advice is like, go talk to customers and never stop talking to customers ever. Like, I think people don't do that enough. Even like founders who are scaling businesses, like, I don't think they talk to their customers enough. And it was awful. Like, I hated randomly like going up to people in coffee shops or like cold calling, walking into doctor's offices and being like, hey, I'm working on a project. Would you look at this? It was very uncomfortable, but it was totally worth it because that's the only way you actually get feedback from people, because anyone is going to say yes on like a phone call or an email and be like, oh yeah, this, or your friends are going to be like, oh yeah, this is totally cool. You should do it. You should not do that until you actually talk to real customers who would pay for it. But yeah, literally, you know, went into coffee shops and showed
just
people,
random people,
like, hey, random people like, hey, I'm working on a project for school. I'm thinking about this business. Like, would you use something like this if it was available? And, you know, I would get stories about people or their parents or like their friends, yeah, or like what they're using for this kind of stuff. And then took that to doctors, and it was a different value story, but it was like, hey, if I could do this with your patients and this is how it, you know, worked for you afterwards, would you use something like this? I literally had to like walk into cold doctors' offices and talk to them or talk to their administrators and, you know, explain what it is we were doing. And all of them were like, why are you here? You know, but it was like really good to get their real feedback about how it was actually working.
Were any of those doctors' offices, were they receptive to it, or were they all kind of like, ah, this isn't our normal process?
No, they were receptive to it, but they were just kind of like, why are you here pitching me some product that doesn't exist? You know, they were busy. So they were open to it, yeah, when I would explain what it was, but it was just, you know, odd for someone to just show up into like their primary care physician's office and start asking them about some business idea that they, you know, were not expecting.
Especially if you don't bring food or pens or something, yeah, to totally give to them, right?
Totally.
Well, so what is it you found from that process that that kind of became the core of what you built out, you know, as the business today?
I think it just validated my fundamental assumption that there is a real gap on the provider side, the actual physicians who are trying to manage these patients who have chronic health issues, that they really have no solution. Like, if I'm coming in there with sort of bottom of the barrel MVP thing I just barely put together and they don't even have anything that good, I'm just like, how are you actually doing this? You know, like, I know the experience, like both of my parents are profile customer, you know, patients who have diabetes, hypertension, trying to manage this stuff at home. And when I talk to them about what are you doing, like their doctors aren't paying attention, like they're on medications for it. They're really not like engaged in any sort of comprehensive plan about how they're going to deal with it. And just seeing that this is how the vast majority operates was eye-opening. And my thought from there was, okay, well, they need this. If I can figure out a way how to monetize this within like the current structure of payment, then we would actually have a business. So that's where I went back and said, like, okay, here's the core issue. You know, we're trying to connect with patients who have these chronic diseases at home. What is the reimbursement mechanism we could like tack onto this? And then we were able to find some reimbursement for it. So it was at least like covering costs. That was probably like the breakthrough, at least initially, of like, how am I going to actually go do this? How am I going to convince a customer to go pay me for services? Was tacking on some reimbursement level to it so we could build a value story around ultimately, like, how do we provide better patient care for your patients?
Yeah. I love this because I'm really curious. I did my MBA program. We did some of these types of projects. And I'm trying to think if anybody from my class ended up starting a business around the project they did. And I don't think they did. And maybe it was because it was an executive program and people had jobs and this was, you know, this was more like an assignment. Was there a point where did you go into this assignment or this project and say, like, I want to start a business? Or did this start out more as an assignment and eventually you're like, wait a second, I think I got to start a business around this?
It was kind of both. Like, it was the assignment. I was doing the assignment. I wasn't sort of guaranteed a business was going to come out of this. But I also was like, I've invested time in this. I know this could be a business. Yeah. If I'm going to vet it out, I might as well do this. Like, one of the assignments was, you know, build a whole marketing strategy around a business. And some of the other people in the course were like, I'm going to take a shoe company and like write a whole marketing plan around it. Or I'm going to take, you know, like a publicly traded company and write a marketing plan around it. Like, to me, that's just waste. You're going to throw it away. Like, if I'm going to do it, why don't I do the marketing summary on our business and like think about it, get feedback from it. And I would always complain to other people in the class. I was like, you guys are literally throwing away just a massive opportunity to like learn something here just by kind of like phoning it in and getting the assignment done.
Yeah.
Cause there was one class. It was so awesome because they literally took people from undergrad and it was like computer science, engineering, marketing, business, and paired them with an MBA team to like go build a program. It's like,
yeah,
I have free engineering talent. I have a marketing talent. I have computer science. I have a business major in here. Like, I literally have an executive team. They're obviously college students, so they're not.
So they're not constrained by convention is what that means, right?
Exactly. And they were like some of the other people were just like, again, doing sort of like just boilerplate stuff to throw it in. But I'm like, you're not going to have this experience where you get to work with this group of people who can bring like a lot of unpaid labor to like build something out. So if you're interested in starting a business, you should take advantage of the resources that you have here. Cause I found that hugely valuable for me.
Yeah. I love this. What did the trajectory look like as you started to build? I mean, when you brought people on, you started to find customers, like when did you feel like you were kind of in the groove? Like, hey, we're actually building a real thing here.
So I was doing everything when I started. I was like doing the marketing stuff. I was doing the code development. I was doing the cold calling. I was literally like cold calling physician offices to ask them if they would deploy this program. Two points, maybe three. One, like, we got our first customer. That was insane that somebody actually said, yeah, I'll sign a contract with you to go do this. I'm like, that's awesome. Then I remember like doing work for him. And then he actually paid us, you know, we paid at the end of the month and it was like an $800 invoice or something. And I remember feeling so excited, like, oh my God, this guy just paid us $800 for like this app I built in my, you know, loft here. That sort of validated that there was a customer, even though it meant, you know, nothing in the grand scheme of things. And then where I really knew we were like moving was basically it came to the point where, you know, I was still working my day job. I was doing this on the side after hours. And it just got to the point where like, I couldn't even service the customers. Like, I was trying to like hire some people to like do some ad hoc work for us. I was trying to respond to customer questions about things. And I'm like, I either need to shut this off or I need to go in full steam and do it. And that's where I was talking to my wife about like, hey, what should we do? Like, I think I can make this work, but I'm going to have to quit. And then the deal was, well, if you can at least like replace most of your salary, at least your base salary, like you can go do this. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to go do this? I have to go raise venture capital. And then I found out how to raise venture capital, like got a list of people I should reach out to and started that process. And that's where I felt full on when we finished like a round of fundraising. I was a W-2 employee. We hired like our first real employees. That's ever since that, I realized this is like definitely a full-on business that I'm running and transferred from being, you know, my side project into the actual company.
And when was that time frame approximately?
That was like The first customers were like 2021, I think. And then that got too big by like Q3 of that year. So that's when I started looking to raise money. And then I quit and started full time like the beginning of 2022.
Okay. Well, you were in that time. Did you hit the timing well on the funding side? Because that was, there was a lot of money flowing at one point, and then it shut off pretty quickly.
Sort of like I got like the tail end of when the funding was pretty clean. Like, I don't know if I could get funded now or in the last year because it got more tight for sure. So it was definitely like a nicer time. But then at the same time, every time since then, if we were raising, it was always in like the worst possible time. You know, it was just all downhill. So we were kind of, it was kind of funny. Like, I had the easiest time with zero customers, or like, you know, a handful of customers and a deck. Whereas every other time we tried to raise money, we had like real growth, real customers, like a real process, like things were good, but it was always like, well, you could be doing better. You know, we want you to be like double the margin or double the revenue or double the growth rates or whatever, where, you know, it's like, I can only do so much. You know, we haven't raised that much money where we're just going to go blow the doors off or anything. So it was kind of funny. We started at a good time, and then every time since then, it's always been a tight market. But, you know, we've done well enough.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, tell me and give me a picture of what does the company look like today? How many? What do you want to share about that? Employees, revenue, customer base, like whatever you want to share or not share.
Yeah, we're bigger than I thought we were going to be. So we're about 75 employees right now. So it's managing a bigger team than I had really ever expected. We are, you know, in the like high single digits of revenue, still at like a double digit growth rate. So our goal from 2025 to 2026 is about double revenue. So looking to end at about 20 million in revenue. And the main thing we've been really focused on is, how do we scale this company appropriately? You know, like, it does require a lot of headcount. It requires a lot of staffing to be able to manage that. And, you know, doing that thoughtfully in a way that actually like produces value for us and for our customers is important. So we've been trying to kind of like dial back and understand, how do we scale the organization effectively in terms of hiring, you know, comp structure for our employees, like growth plans for our employees, all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, we've probably like 4x'd in size in the last 12 months, just based on growth rate from the customers. And we've really, you know, part of where we did sort of, you know, have a break and breakout was around like the customer profile we've pursued. We started moving further up market, and it's been really game changing for us in terms of just the value story, how the sales process works, how those things scale, like what outcomes they're expecting. And we've been really targeting like a much bigger customer base and moving from like the SMB kind of small market into much more enterprise, you know, health system market, where they have a different pain point, I think, than like the independent practices we started with.
At what point did you recognize that you needed to do that? I mean, was there an issue? Did the revenue stall, or was it just, you know, just looking to add revenue pushed by investors? Like what was the, or maybe somebody from the enterprise level came and said, hey, we've been looking for somebody like you. What happened in the business where you said, we've got to do something a little bit differently than what we've been doing?
It's actually funny. So like, we would see these providers, the smaller providers, and really like their sole focus was on revenue. Like, all they really wanted to see was like revenue driving. And I knew that wasn't our value story. You know, we were not going to get the cheapest stuff in the market. We're not going to like skimp on technology or on people. And they just wanted like the cheapest thing and like generate the most revenue for the practice. So they were literally like, well, just, you know, kick these patients off the program if they're not generating revenue. It's like, no, that's not the point of the program. It's not to generate revenue. So it was kind of like a fundamental concern with them. And then as we grew, it was like we had these great revenue numbers, but then it was a struggle to ever get them to pay, you know? So it's like, okay, well, generated $1 million in revenue, but it's like, I'm not getting the cash for like 90 or 120 days because they are treating their contract as, you know, a guideline rather than like a process.
Right.
So I was like, we need to move. And it was actually funny because I got a lot of pushback from a couple people on the board who were like, don't go enterprise. There's going to be a 2-year sales cycle, 3-year sales cycle. You're not ready to compete with those people. Like, you're doing well, growing with these like small customers to do it. And I was like, no, I don't think that's our right profile. I don't think we're serving them the way I want to serve our customers. So it was a bit of a like debate. We're like, I know if I fail at this, I'm going to hear about it. You know, so it was pretty deliberate for us. And we just knew we had started getting into these like larger customers that were, you know, 10, 20, 30 doctor practices. We nailed one enterprise customer and could just see like the conversations they were having with us were much more aligned to what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, we knew if we could show how we could scale this customer up, even if it was just one of them, it was going to be a much better value story. So we ultimately like split our customer profile into like no more selling into small market customers. 80% of the time should be invested in the larger end of mid-market, and then keep 20% of the time to enterprise customers. And we started building more of like a referral base of customers who were, you know, referenceable in that space. So we had to like move up, get some customers that looked like the other customers we wanted to be able to, you know, use them in a sense to show, yeah, we've done this before with another customer that looks like you.
Sounds like you had a very programmed approach to making this transition. It wasn't just, hey, we want to get bigger customers. Let's go figure it out. Sounds like, and maybe there was some of that, but did a lot of this come from the team, or did you have to push for it? Like, how did the team respond when you said, I think we're going to stop selling to the customers we have right now?
Yeah, we literally went through and said, I think I'm going to terminate all of our customers right now because...
Oh, not only stop selling, you're going to be like, hey, I think we're done with them.
Yeah, I mean, we just put through like, hey, if these customers like met this criteria where, you know, they were small panels, they were not paying on time, they were difficult to work with, like we're just going to issue a term notice and be done with them. These ones, if we think we can maintain them, here's the criteria we need to be able to keep them. They need to grow to a certain level. They need to make sure they're paying on time, updating their contract. So we did keep a handful of them. But then going forward, it was like, we're not selling to this customer anymore. We need to sell to these other customers. I think most of the team was super happy about it because, you know, like our operational team was like, hey, this is way more like predictable. I understand how they're going to work. It's easier to manage one large client than 10 small clients. But the one place I would get pushback would be from sales, where it's like, hey, I was successful selling into this small market account. Now you're asking me to sell into something that is more difficult. But
totally,
you know, we kind of went through a whole, And I mean, it wasn't like difficult, but it was just like, okay, well, if you're going to make me sell into this new kind of account, I need tools to be able to like sell effectively into the account. So we went through kind of like a whole ideal customer profile exercise. What is their pain point? What exactly is the customer we're looking at? Where do I get these leads? And like, how are we going to go pursue them? So it did require like reinvestment on the company side of, okay, let's get together the materials, the messaging, like the marketing and everything we're doing after this specific customer to help them sell a little bit better.
Was there anything in that transition that surprised you? Like what didn't work out the way that you thought it would? And maybe it was better, maybe it was worse, but what did you try? And you're like, I think we're going to get this. And then all of a sudden you learned that that's not how it works.
I was surprised in a good way about how well we competed and that market, and how we were basically over-engineering and overselling into the small market. So like we were investing in things like the technology and, you know, how we were investing in our clinical team, where I think our earlier customers didn't even see the value in any of that. They didn't care one way or the other whether they had an awesome nurse on their panel or a medical assistant on their panel. And then by the time we did start selling into the bigger practices, you know, they were evaluating us against really like best in class competitors. And they were like, yep, you guys are head to head. Like it's going to come down to X, Y, and Z, whether it's, you know, pricing or reliability or, you know, relationships or something. But it was never like, oh, their technology is way better or their solution is way different and better than what you're doing. We were always really competitive. That was surprising because, you know, like I said, we're relatively small, like in the space, and to think we're able to compete with so much less resource is, you know, was exciting to kind of see.
Yeah, I was going to say that's got to be validating for somebody who's kind of a proclaimed builder, you know, to be the one who says, who I'm sure you contributed a lot to the how that system and those policies and processes were built out. So seeing that adoption was not as difficult as it could have been otherwise with this new ideal customer profile, that's got to be really exciting.
Like, that's why we literally started, like, I would take anybody, like anybody who was willing to sign up and pay. Like, there was no criteria. If you were willing to do it, like, we'd figure it out. And I was always afraid, like, I don't want to put this in front of anybody who, you know, is really going to like vet it out, because like, it's untested. You know, we don't know if this is actually going to work, how everything is going to operationalize. So I just got like more comfortable with that as we started dealing with bigger and bigger people. Now I'm very confident, you know, we can put this up against anybody, whether it's, you know, our clinical model, our software or hardware solution, like anything. I know we would do at least as well, or at least be fine being in the same room, even if it's like, oh, this one's like a little bit nicer on X, but nothing where, you know, I'm ashamed of the product, which is exciting, you know. And it's not just me, like everybody's built this out, and just seeing kind of how that all expands has been exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're, I mean, the metaphor I like to use is when you paint your own house, you know where all the flaws are, you know where all the drips sit. So it's nice to have somebody come over and be like, oh, this is really nice. You did a great job. So
that's actually funny, because that is like, I'm the worst at trying to pitch anything for the company, because like, I know everything that we've done.
Do you caveat everything? You're like, hey, by the way, I probably don't need to tell you this, but I'm going to let you know.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, oh, don't talk about this thing, because this thing's like broken. This is not like the way it's supposed to be. So I've tried to like divest that off and like not spend as much time with it. Or to your point, like, I understand that I'm the painter. I know what happened, and it's still a good paint job, even if like I know what's sitting underneath it. Because I think everyone deals with that as a, you know, a builder or doing something that they put together.
The good thing, though, is it doesn't stop, you know, I've worked, it doesn't stop you from taking action, as I think we talked about earlier, because I know a lot of inventors, and I call it the inventor syndrome, right? A lot of inventors who like to invent things, but not actually make or sell things. They just invent, and then they don't want anybody to call their baby ugly. So they don't ever show their baby to anybody. And you're like, well, that was an expensive trophy, like the ones you see back here, right? Expensive trophy to buy, but you know, you kind of missed out on all the fun of building the business from it. So I'm curious, is there anything from the kind of the core, from the early days that you built, that carried over into the product today and has been, you know, or did you have to rebuild it for the new client, and all of a sudden it's kind of a different product? Were there any threads that kind of carried through?
I mean, even the core application is still the same thing we built originally. So the actual software is the same. It's obviously been way bulked up and built upon, but there's still things, the stuff that I actually built, that I'll still go in there and see. And it's kind of funny, like I will randomly go into the software and I'll be like, oh man, this is cool. We did this. This is nice. I didn't know this was here. But the main framing of it is still the same. And like the model ultimately is still the same, but from a building perspective, I'm not allowed to touch the core code anymore. My CTO won't let
it's
me
not
do
your,
any of that.
It's not your role anymore.
Yeah, so. No, he doesn't let me
well,
do
that's
any
kinda,
of that.
That's
I was doing it
cool.
for quite a while.
Yeah, that's really cool. Right. It sounds like maybe a testament to the validation that you did early on, and what you built matched the validation probably, so.
Yeah, I think that isn't like, that's one thing that's kind of cool or interesting is I'm not a super technical person. I mean, I can fiddle my way around to get it done, but I had enough to like build an MVP. So when I did bring in a CTO, he didn't have to figure out like, what's in your head, Seth? Like, how am I going to go build this? It's like, this is functioning. I need you to go learn from what's working. And then how do we like make this enterprise scale? And he came from no healthcare background whatsoever. So it was kind of like an interesting matchup where I just showed him this. These are the core things that like need to happen, but I need you to build it from like a technology perspective. And he kind of kept the core things, ripped out what didn't need to be there, started building on top of it, and just learned a ton. So, you know, I was able to give him enough to work with so he could kind of understand how the healthcare stuff operates. And then now he's so vested in the actual program, you know, that he really is the one who's like building more of the expansion and ideas and things like that. So it was kind of an interesting blend, you know, when I found my CTO to really like help scale it, but he's been super instrumental in getting the product where it is now.
Yeah. No, it's cool to see what you've built and the adoption. And you know, doubling your revenue this year is, that's a fantastic metric to hit. Are there other things in the business where you're, you know, you're excited for what's kind of on the roadmap for the next 3 to 5 years?
I mean, our big goal is to really get like a handful of additional enterprise customers. Like we're starting to get into more like, you know, it's like risk sharing arrangements with some of our customers, expanding into different clinical services. Like we started doing things with like OB care for, you know, high risk pregnancies and things like that. So just seeing how far we can evolve the model. And from a regulatory perspective, I think just a lot is changing and pushing more in this direction, whether it's how do we use technology and automation to help patients like get better care, get better access. And then also with all the stuff with AI, how's that going to fit into like the model? Like I said, originally we had to find some sort of financing mechanism that pays for things. So as you know, Medicare or any of the commercial plans start paying for, you know, AI based like treatments or assessments or anything like that, like being on the forefront of that, because I think that's going to be super exciting about being able to do that. We always say, you know, our AI is not making clinical decisions. It's superpowering the people who do. So being able to like use more of that to help our decisions clinically is going to be exciting. My shortest term goal is like, I want to get the business profitable. We're quite close to getting profitable, but being in a position where you're not required to raise, you know, venture capital or debt to kind of sustain the business would be super exciting for me. Like I've never been one of those people like, let's just raise a ton of money and like burn a bunch of money and then figure it out in 2 years. Like I've been very thoughtful about how we spend money, where we're spending it. And again, back to my initial point about being validated, like to say we built a profitable company that's generating revenue, generating returns for like our investors would be super exciting. So I really want to focus on how we operationalize this in a way that eliminates a ton of the risk, if not all of the risk, of just being a sustainable business first and foremost. And then how do we, you know, take that success and then scale it up into a bigger version of the company?
Now, stability, there's value in stability, right? The getting to that point where you say, oh, we can sustain this for the long term. Is there a part of your journey where you would if you were talking with either your younger self, right, in the business or somebody else who's on a similar path but maybe hasn't crossed all the bridges that you've crossed, is there something you would tell them, some type of advice you'd give to them from your journey, an insight that you could share that they might not be thinking of?
If I was telling my younger self, I would definitely say do this sooner than I did, you know, because like it would have been way easier to start. I mean, I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks, you know, starting a business straight out of college is way easier. You know, I started my business, I was in my 40s, you know, so I had a mortgage, I had kids, I had a wife, I had pets. You know, it's like, how do you give all that stuff up and like go into this like high risk place? You know, it's super hard and it's not going to get any easier, you know? So if you want to build your career and then go start a business, like the odds probably go down dramatically. So if you're going to do it, go do it. And then just the general thing is like, I think too many people wait until they've got it all figured out and like, okay, I've got the perfect business plan. I've got the perfect amount of capital. I've got the perfect team around me. Like now I'm going to get started. And like, that's never going to happen. You're never going to have the perfect anything. So if you've got a thought, you want to go try to do it, go do it. I tell everyone the coolest thing that ever happened to me is I read a book called The $100 Startup. And it was literally, I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's like literally, how could you start a business with $100? And I was always of the mindset, I got to raise $10 million in venture capital. I've got to like fund my whole team. I've got to build a product and then I'm going to go sell. And this $100 startup was basically, you know, if you've got an idea for a clothing company, put up a website with some designs on it. If people actually come to it and want it, you know, you have a viable business. If nobody does, don't bother. If you want to start a consulting business, make a website and say you've got consulting resources. If people actually will pay for you, they'll go there, you know? So like, you can actually find out pretty quickly and cheaply whether your business actually makes sense, and there's no need to go hire a whole team, especially with AI now. I mean, like, you could spin up a website, build an MVP, get stuff like out and running into the market pretty quickly, and they'll tell you whether or not your business idea is stupid or not. You know, so like, just go build it, figure it out. And where we are as a company now is probably like, if not 180, maybe 150 degrees different than we were when we started. And it's just because of what we learned as we were building the company and recognizing customer problems, seeing things we could do better, and, you know, evolving the company. Like, we started, it was like not supposed to be a clinical services company. It was all technology. And then as we talked to people and looked at the market, it was like, it doesn't matter if you have an app, if they don't have someone to work with, it's not going to move the needle. So we ended up like staffing up all these clinicians. So like, I thought we were building a tech platform. Now I employ like 60 nurses to go help these patients with their care. But, you know, it's just what has to happen. And it's worked out. You know, we've been able to build careers for some people here. We've been able to like really help a lot of patients. It just wasn't what I thought we were doing, you know, and you're never going to have the roadmap kind of mapped out for you.
On your point about the $100 startup, the cup of coffee doesn't cost that much. I hope someday I read an article that you've written about your coffee shop validation efforts. I think there are a lot of people that would benefit from that. Sounds like it's in alignment with the $100 startup concept too. So, well, Seth, this has been a fantastic conversation. Sorry we've come to an end here, but I got to let you go. You probably have some important stuff to get back to that I'm keeping you from, but this has been fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some insights, talking about how you built your company. Is there anything, if you're just put a plug in for Wellbe Health, anything you want to leave with the audience or somebody who might hear this?
Yeah, just happy to give input to any other CEOs who want help. I told you it was a lonely, interesting job. So anyone who wants to chat, always open to it. And then we're always looking for customers. You know, if you've got anyone in the healthcare space that wants to learn about what we're doing, you can go to wellbehealth.com and take a look. We're also hiring a bunch of clinicians. So if you know any good nurses, send them over our way. I'm happy to talk to them.
I love it. Love it. Well, appreciate you being on the show today, Seth. It's been a pleasure having you here, and glad to get to know you and your company.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome. And for everybody else who's joined us on this episode of The Breakout CEO, thanks for coming, and we'll see you next time. Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.